some people like Chris Emma.
We both fall into that category. Chris Emma is here with our Bears report, and we are happy that he is here to kind of break all of this stuff down for us. Whenever we talk Bears here on The Score, it's brought to you by Chevy and the Chevy Silverado. He is here now.
What up, Chris Emma? By the way, real quick, the Brewers have acquired or just about to acquire a catcher from Tampa named Danny Jansen, former Blue Jay, briefly a Red Sox player as well. OPS over 700, nice depth catcher for Milwaukee, but not an earth-shattering bit of trade news. We're watching along with everything. Chris Emma, good to see you, my man.
What's up, boys? How we doing?
Solid. Tell us about practice this morning and the vibes. You were up there.
Yeah, it was a very hot morning. Temperatures, I was following along. Hit triple digits by about 10 o'clock. You felt it out there. You really felt it.
Wow.
Stands were full. Fans were out. It was a community day, so you had Military Appreciation Day, but it was the first full day of pads, and the energy picked up a little bit. Here's Richard Hightower right out of the gates, bringing the energy for everybody.
All right. Afternoon. Afternoon. Man, gotta get y'all like the players.
Still morning.
It's morning to you. I've been up since 4:30. Been an officer at 4:30, so it's morning to you.
Harumph, harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of you.
It was 10 in the morning. Good afternoon right out of the gates there.
That's what everybody's saying, okay, good afternoon, but it's 10 a.m.
But it's the morning time still.
They were juiced today.
But not for him, because he gets there at 4:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Gets there early.
So Richard Hightower is a guy who obviously over now one of the incumbents from this previous staff, leading a special teams group and really trying to carry on the message of Ben Johnson. And you feel that as he evaluates the players that he has and starts to get a sense now with this 90-man roster of who's going to be really able to fit into some of these roles. And you got the sense that when you hear from Richard Hightower about what he's looking for in these players. So you feel the energy every time he talks, and certainly he's looking for the same out of his players. So here's more Richard Hightower.
We talk about mentality from the very first start, like what we believe in, what our core is, what our beliefs are, what our philosophy is. And the scouting department does a really good job of bringing those type of guys in. So from day one, if you don't have that, then you're probably not going to last in our room. But we judge that by the way they work. We evaluate everything they do. So we evaluate the way they watch tape, the way they come back, all right, from the tape after practice, how hard they work in the weight room, how they walk around, how they treat people. All of that is part of being a pro. And then ultimately, it's about producing. So if they don't have the right mentality, they can't play here anyway, because that's how Ben is. Like, they can't play here. And they damn sure can't play in my room if they don't have the right mentality.
It's a smart holdover because it's a guy who deals with the bottom third of the roster and can fill in a lot of blanks for them. And I trust his take on the character of players and such. But it's also interesting to hear him say that's how Ben is. Like, there's a new sheriff for Richard to listen to and abide by as well as everybody.
Yeah, I think he really embraces what Ben is preaching. And since he's gone to work with Ben beginning in January and obviously taken on to the new coaching staff, I think he's really wanted to replicate that message. And as you mentioned, to the bottom of the roster, like this is a 90-man roster right now. He has no clue what his unit's going to look like. We know Ben's building his offense. Dennis is establishing his way on defense. Richard Hightower doesn't know what his special teams unit's going to look like. All he can do right now is really establish what Ben Johnson is trying to do in terms of setting standards, building a culture, and putting those expectations in place. And you get a sense of that when you hear Richard Hightower talk right there, because that's not a message for the media. That's a message for the players. That's in every meeting room that he's doing. And you get a feel for what they're trying to preach in that building now.
Emma, I want to run something by you before we continue on with your hit. Something that Spiegs and I were talking about to start off the show today. And that's some of the stuff that was said by Ben Johnson on Saturday, that where he was talking about the things that Caleb has. Alex, we have it. Let's play it for Emma so that we can kind of get his reaction. But Spiegs and I were talking about this as figuring out whether or not we are looking at a Caleb Williams rookie season 2.0 type situation. And that's the way that I felt when I heard him talking about it. And I played it for Spiegs, and Spiegs was like, oh my, like when he heard it, This is, for those of you who are just in your car and you're like, wait, what are you guys talking about? This is what we're talking about.
As you work with Caleb, a lot of what you're describing over the last 6 months or so since you've been here is literally from the ground up with his footwork. How much or what is reasonable to expect to have carried over from last year? As you try to teach him, what does he already have from playing a full season?
There really isn't a ton of carryover from what he was asked to do, the play calls or anything of that nature. I mean, he's always been very comfortable as a shotgun quarterback going back to college and even last year. He's very comfortable in a two-minute setting. He's very comfortable with tempo-type plays. And so now we're asking him to be a little bit more structured in terms of the play calls. Sometimes there's multiple calls. You know, there's shifts, there's motions. There's a lot more going on mentally than probably there's ever been for him. And so at some point, this thing will start slowing down, and he's going to be able to catch up, and his physical ability will take over from there. But right now, because mentally it is what it is, he's playing a little bit slower than what he's capable of.
Is there anything that is – I mean, he's not a rookie. Is there anything that you get from those 17 games last year, at least in – seeing defenses, seeing personnel, is there anything that is already built?
Yeah, because I wasn't here, I can't speak entirely to that. But sure, I think he understands what a training camp's going to be about. He knows what a game week is going to look like. There's some things that hopefully the anxiety level goes down because, oh, okay, I know what to expect now. But it's still, there's a lot different than what there was for him a year ago.
All right, Emma, you were in the room for that. Well, what did you hear there?
The same thing I heard in 2018 when Matt Nagy came in with Mitch Trubisky, and the same thing I heard in 2022 when Matt Eberflus and staff came in with Justin Fields. Like, this is what happens when you bring in a second-year quarterback and a new coach, and you got to reset things. And here you are again. You've reset the cycle once again between head coach and quarterback, and it's the same mistake the Bears have done before and faltered with miserably. And I think it's going to be different because I do believe in Caleb Williams and I believe in Ben Johnson. I think they're going to find that same page. These are the growing pains right now. Like, you can see through some of the struggles that Caleb Williams has had that it's not just a bad day. It's not the arm is off. It's a lot's going through his head. Like, and you heard Declan Doyle allude to it on Friday as well. Like, pre-snap, they think he's really improving. The cadence, everything, mastery at the line. Post-snap, it goes quickly, obviously. And they're pressuring him. They're getting Montez Sweat right in his face all the time. I think a lot's just going through his head. I think too much in terms of, well, where's my route precision? Where's this guy supposed to be? When am I supposed to get that timing element down? I think it's moving really fast for Caleb Williams right now. That's to be expected. You've got a new scheme that's being built on the fly. They're only, a quarter of the way through the install, according to Ben Johnson. It's going to take some time. You're seeing the struggles that are probably expected because this is what happens when you're building an offense out for a young quarterback and doing it now in his second year. You wasted so much of last season with this kid, and it really sucks because
it
you know
sounds
how
like they wasted all of it.
Yeah, it feels like it.
I think they wasted all of it, and I think you're right, Chris, that it is the same as these timelines and scenarios that we've dealt with, but I think this kid is different than Mitch and Justin, and I think this coach is very different than Nagy. And obviously, Eberflus is a defensive guy who brought in Getsy. But I think these two guys are different,
and
I think.
The fatal flaw for Justin Fields, in my belief, was just a struggle to process, a struggle through processing with what the play is, what he needs to do once the ball is in his hands, when he needs to make that decision. And so many of Justin Fields' best plays were on the move and improvising. And I don't want to look back in the past, but that's why it didn't work out with him. There's a lot more with Mitch Trubisky.
It's on the table that Caleb will struggle with the same stuff.
We don't know that he's not going to struggle, but I believe just based on everything you know about the kid that he's going to be able to process differently, and that's going to be the piece and why it's different from past quarterbacks. I believe he has what it takes in terms of the work ethic away from the building, what he needs to do to be successful, but just that processing element, you either have that or you don't, and you can't replicate it. That's not something you can coach up no matter how many different great coaches you have coming in. You either have that or you don't, and that's how you maximize your skill set. Caleb Williams has the skill set, and he has the processing ability. I think you're going to see it eventually, but it's just not there right now.
So they got into pads now. So what were the padded practices like?
So, yeah, so today was three different team periods split up throughout practice. It was a shorter practice, just a little over 90 minutes, and a heavier emphasis on the screen game, on the running game as well. They started light, even with full pads, because you're supposed to, I think, through the CBA rules. Drew Dahlman was excited to get out there in full pads. Here's Drew Dahlman on what the Bears accomplished today and how they're getting established on offense.
I wouldn't say it's too different. Obviously, there's different things that are allowed, and, you know, practice like more high contact drills and things like that. But as far as mindset and mentality, we're coming out to work as hard as we can. Football is a physical game, and we're working on being a physical team. So that's been part of our DNA this whole time.
Was it nice to kind of get started truly with the run game? Hard to do that without the pads on, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to the run game. You know, there's a lot of cohesion, there's a lot of communication, all those things. As well as the physical piece, which was on more display today. But we've been working on all facets of it since April 7th or whenever our first day was. So this feels like a step in a long process that we've already undergone, or we've been undertaking.
How's the chemistry going with you and Caleb?
It's been good, yeah. Caleb's awesome. Great to work with him. Great to work with the other O-line guys. And it's one of those things where, you know, every day something gets better, and then you always have new things to patch up and fix and work on. And it's been a pleasure to, like, work on those things, like, oh, I need to do this, he needs to do this, and kind of work together on those.
Obviously, building a rapport with the quarterback, there's always a bit of a process there, but is anything different when Caleb is, you know, not as, I guess, familiar with the under center stuff as he is with the shotgun stuff? Is there anything different, like, building that rapport with a guy who is also learning the under center at the same time?
I mean, honestly, I haven't really noticed. He does a great job with it. We've had like plenty of learning moments where we're kind of getting a feel for each other. Every quarterback and center exchange is like a little different. But yeah, it's been great, and he's done a great job.
Given his ability to throw on the run, kind of going both ways, what would a good run game just do to kind of unlock his strengths in the past game?
Yeah, I think kind of football 101. The more stress you can put on the defense being able to run the ball, that opens things in the pass game. And when you're a team that can attack as an offense from multiple directions, as far as like run and pass and stuff like that, that makes you really effective. So I think it all ties together.
Super smart guy. Really glad you highlighted a big chunk for us to play, Chris. That's Caleb's partner. You know, we've been talking about it for a lot of years, how these young quarterbacks need their center. Go get Justin, his Jason Kelce. And now it's like, all right, go get Caleb, his Jason Kelce. He's got his Drew Dahlman, and their partnership's a big deal, man.
Well, they better stop dropping the exchange, or else Ben Johnson's going to be mad. Not in this high school Harry stuff.
What a line
poor
that
Harry.
Was. Yeah, it's. I mean, you saw it again today. They got to work on that one, no doubt. But
oh, it happened again today.
It happened again today.
Harry deserves it.
That's high school Harry stuff right there.
Tough day for Harry.
Harry was bad in high school. That's a problem.
I want to reiterate something our buddy Mark Grody said earlier on the midday show, and I love the way he put this. Like, it's just great to have somebody like that at center. Like, they've been trying to figure this position out the last few years. Not only that, but with Joe Tooney at his left side and Jonah Jackson on his right side, you've got a really good interior. You got that offensive line is set now. Darnell Wright, you want to see continuing to develop on the right tackle side. And obviously at left tackle, you're going to figure that one out. But Drew Dahlman being the center and that partner, that caddy for Caleb Williams, very important. I think that's a great asset to have.
Let's get to Jaquan Brisker, because we are going to talk with Ron Coomer coming up at 5:25. We'll get back on some Cubs stuff, but we want to get to this. What's the latest, Emma?
Jaquan Brisker spoke today. He's out there, obviously, full go for training camp. And look, his health is obviously at the forefront here, and this has been a concern after missing so much of last season. He was out there practicing in full pads, but without the guardian cap, which you've seen a lot of players, including Roschon Johnson, wearing, who have dealt with those concussions. And Jaquan Brisker talked about his health, where he hopes to go with this, his goal for this season, but also what he's going to do or not do to prevent it. So here's Jaquan Brisker.
I could really just play all 21 games. When I say 21, plus playoffs and Super Bowl. But just really, I could play all 21 games, and that I'm a playmaker. I make plays. You know, I'm a hit. I'm a tackle. Cover. You know, make plays on the ball, things like that. So.
Are there any tweaks that you've had to make to how you play to try and stay on the field maybe a little bit longer? Because you played the play right and it still ended in a concussion.
Yeah, probably just not lead with my helmet. I'll say that, not lead with my head. Other than that, I mean, that was my first, you know, injury that I had, like tackling somebody. So I'll say that.
One of the keys for you here has got to be being on the field at this time of year too, because I think the past couple of years you missed chunks of training camp. Is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Is it especially important to be out with the new scheme being put in?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to be out there. I want to be out there. But, I mean, previous years, my first year, I was out there the whole time. But I got hurt the first game in the preseason. Had to get surgery. And then the other 2 years, I had soft tissue injuries. But, you know, all those, you know, years I was, you know, having great camps, I just, you know, got tweaked, you know, a little injury. But, of course, I want to be out there. I want to play. Obviously, I, you know what I got to do this year to, you know, stay out there during camp and make sure I finish.
Didn't look like you were wearing a Guardian cap out there.
No.
Is there anything, or have you given any consideration to that?
No. Nope. I got a new helmet.
What kind?
The Exium. Yeah. Yes.
Is there, and I know you said that you're not going to change the way you play because of the concussions you've had.
No.
Did you think about the Guardian cap, at least in practice?
Just no, I didn't think about it.
All right, so no Guardian cap for Jaquan Brisker. He did say earlier that he's going to try and not to lead with his head and lead with his helmet.
But I thought the point that was made inside the room was a really good one. The injury that put him out.
He did everything right.
He did everything right. That was on the offensive player, you know, and I don't know. Like, it's some guys can throw themselves at players and not end up in the space that he was at. And then some guys get a glancing blow. Like, the brain science is so unique, and it's scary. It's really, really scary. So I wish him the best of luck. I do wish that he would wear the Guardian cap at least this time of the year, but it's his choice.
Yeah, I mean, look, he could say all the things he wants about trying to adjust his play style, and I believe him. But when you're out there on the field and you're trying to make a play and it's moving so fast, it's hard to pull back. And
yep.
Like you said, just you wish him the best of luck. It's hard to avoid those violent collisions sometimes, and especially for a guy who's made a career being a violent player in the secondary.
Kudos to Kevin Byard, who said earlier in the week that he was going to call out if he sees symptoms from Jaquan. He's going to go ahead and point that out to the team, and it's an odd place for a veteran to have to be. You know, you don't want to rat on a younger player, but I think it's the right thing to do. But Jaquan also talked about moving around in this defense, right, Chris?
Yeah, I think Dennis Allen absolutely sees him as a really key figure in this defensive identity. So here's Jaquan Brisker and the role he could play within this defense.
Just different roles. I'm going to be close to the line of scrimmage. Sometimes I'm going to be back. But I love being closer to the line of scrimmage. So just, you know, having me anywhere where you got to account for me, try to see where I'm at and things like that. Just like Ben said the other day, you got to know where Nan is, and that's true. So, yeah, I'll say I'll be close. I'll be in the back. I might be outside corner. I might be in the slot. You never know.
You feel like that'll bring up improvement to the run game this season, sure, with you being close to the line?
Mm-hmm, yeah, I think so. Anytime I'm closer to the ball and in the run game, I know how to fit. You know, I know how to play the run. Like that. It's simple and easy for me, and it makes everybody else play faster. So, I'm very effective.
Nuggets and tidbits?
Yeah, Braxton Jones rejoined individual and teamwork today. Good to see him back out there. Ozzie Trapillo had his moments, as well as Karan Amagachi with the first team offense. Case Keenan was your QB2 for the day. Newly signed defensive end Tanok Passagnol left the practice in a cart. It looked like a hand or wrist injury. The great Devin Hester was present for practice. So too were the Bulls' Modest Bazelis and Iota Sumu.
Modest and Caleb have kind of become friends, so that's cool. A couple of the young guys in town that people have a lot of faith in. So it's good to see that. Emma, great job as always. We appreciate you.
Take care.
That's Chris Emma from our staff. Read his stuff on 670thescore.com. Listen to him do sports as an anchor over on our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. We need to take a break. Why? Because Ron Coomer's about to call us, and we're going to talk to him about Cubs and Brewers and whatnot next on The Score.
Two down, here's Michael Busch. He's 0 for 2 today with a couple of strikeouts. Left-handed batter facing the righty Burke and the pitch. He swings and fouls it back just underneath us. He's able to quickly gauge that I was not in danger for that foul ball.
I was ready and was going to dive in front of you, Zach.
I have no faith in you, but thankfully Coom is here, the former big leader of the pitch. Busch swings and misses. 0-2. If you were in front of me, I'd have a little bit more faith.
There's a lot of action up here. My goodness. close to home plate here at Wrigley Field.
It is the truth. Tonight, the Cubs and Brewers begin a huge series from Milwaukee. Pregame coverage begins at 6:05. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer have first pitch at 6:40 on The Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
Zach is right to not have faith in me, to leap down from the top row and get in front. But Coom would be able to get it. And as we bring in Ron Coomer right now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, download the Circa app today. Coom, that spot there at Wrigley Field, is that among the most susceptible the booths are for foul balls? Because, my goodness, it felt like one could come at any moment in that place.
You're definitely close to the baseball. You got to pay attention. There's no doubt. It's about the extreme opposite of, like, Washington, D.C. when we go there. You're so far from home plate, I don't even know if we're in the same zip code as the playing surface. So it's a little different, but you got to keep your eyes open and watch the game, that's for sure.
How about Milwaukee, where you are right now? What are the chances you get invaded by a baseball tonight?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a hole right behind the Hall of Famer here that a ball blasted into the wall. And so there's a hole in the wall right behind Pat where a ball hits. You're definitely in action here with a left-handed hitter for sure.
Coom, it's really weird, like, watching the Cubs this year, because it's felt like they've been in control of this division the whole time. And then you look up and you're at the All-Star break and the Brewers are only one game behind. And you look up and then they're in first place by a game. And now it's a dogfight. Like, and now these two teams have the opportunities of, what, eight games with each other over the next few weeks and to kind of settle this to a degree. What's made the Brewers the team that haven't gone away?
Well, I just think they're a good team. They have a lot of pieces that, you know, make for a winning ball club. You got a winning manager who knows how to motivate. That's first and foremost. And Pat Murphy, I've known Murph for a long, long time. And he's always been that guy, whether he's been in college or pro baseball. And so that's A. B, they got a great pitching staff. You know, you're going to hear Craig Counsell talk about it today in the manager's show. And so they've got a great staff. And that always keeps you in games. And then they got some star players. So, I mean, you know, and very good team speed. They're a lot different than the Cubs in the makeup of their lineup. You know, where the Cubs have boppers and can launch balls out of the ballpark and put some crooked numbers on you in a hurry. This Milwaukee team, you know, they run. They get good team speed. They hit the ball on the ground, which, you know, the analytics people don't like. But they have good speed. So they hit the ball on the ground and they create issues for the opposing team's defense. But they're a good team. You know, and the other thing you got to remember about organizations that have been winning, they expect to win. When you've been winning over and over and over, and that's what you got to say about this Milwaukee group for quite some time, they know how to win, and they're continuing to do it. So the Cubs are in a dogfight. I really, you know, to me, in looking at this season, you know, when we were leaving spring training, you know, this is what you expected. I expected Milwaukee to be the team that the Cubs had to, you know, contend with, you know, for the division, and then St. Louis. And that's kind of how it's been so far.
Kuma, the Brewers are 25th in home runs in baseball. The Cubs are third. But the Brewers are 7th in on-base percentage. Cubs are 6th ahead of them. Brewers are 3rd in stolen bases. Cubs are 2nd ahead of them. I feel like the Cubs are pretty darn good at some of the things the Brewers are good at, too. So, if I had to say which team's better offensively, it's the Cubs, and not just because of the home runs, because they're kind of almost as good at some of the other stuff, too.
No, I would agree, Matt. I don't disagree at all. I think the Cubs are the best team in the division, you know, and I see that in spring. But that doesn't necessarily equate to wins all the time, you know, and being the team that wins the division, you know. When you steal a base, if you steal 6 bases or 5 bases in a game and, you know, 3 of them were really kind of like, ho-ha, it didn't really matter, you know, did it affect the game? No. If you stole 2 bases that created runs and you win by a run, you know, that's winning baseball. There's something to that statement of playing winning baseball, and Milwaukee knows how to play winning baseball. They've been doing it. Now the Cubs offense has been doing it too. you know, I'm not taking anything away from our group, that's for sure. But there's something to be said about the way they play and being able to do things to win games. And that's an intangible that, you know, you don't see, just it doesn't just stand out to everybody.
Ron Coomer is joining us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. He is in Milwaukee as the Cubs get ready to take on the Brewers in Milwaukee. Coom, I talk with Spiegs all the time about how I take you and Pat out for a walk every night. I listen to a couple of innings every night, and you guys are with me on my walk. Inside of that, you guys have, and you in particular, Coom, have done a great job of talking about what's happened with Matt Shaw. From the time that he got here, your concerns about his swing, to him going back down, to now him coming back up, and after the All-Star break, he's been dynamite. When it comes to how his swing has evolved from the beginning of the season to where we're at now, what are you seeing?
Well, he's a different hitter right now than what he was, you know, as we were leaving camp, that's for sure. When we were leaving camp, you know, I watched him hit right before we left on the field, on a backfield. And first and foremost, to me, you know, and I've been in this game a long time, and I played, you know, for 17 years. The absolutes of hitting, I don't care who you talk to and what era. If your head is moving a lot and your eyes are moving a lot, you're going to have a really hard time hitting. And his head was moving substantially forward at the pitcher. And to me, that's a red flag. He has quieted that down a ton since, you know, the opening day, let's say. The other thing, the leg kick. Now, that's something you can hit with. But, boy, you've got to be good with it, and you got to get your front foot down before you commit to where you're swinging. He wasn't always doing that or wasn't doing it much at all. And that's another big issue. So early in the season, he had some issues. And you're just not able to put the barrel of the bat on a baseball. He went down and corrected some of them, came back, still struggled, but, you know, was a little better. And now after the break, he's even made some more changes, and I just think he's more athletic too. Now he, with his stance and setup, he can turn and finish the swing, and his whole body can rotate through the swing, where before he just couldn't do that. And the other part of it, where he was sitting trying to see the ball, you're not able to pick up the pitch inside. It looks like it's going to hit you. And we would see him flinch a lot at the inside pitch. That just tells me he's not picking up the ball and he's got too much movement with his head. And he's quieting that down. That's a work in progress for everybody. But he is getting there, and it's showing in his performance.
Ooh, he's able to finish the swing athletically on the inside stuff, and he's turning on it now. It's man, it's so good to hear Coom talking hitting. He can talk pitching, though, too. Do you have a theory, or how concerned are you about Shota Imanaga's velocity dip on Friday night? It's a big story coming out of that series, and we'll see Shota again in this one.
Yeah, I'm not not even a little bit. I hate to be that guy, but,
good.
You know, to me, I you know, Shota doesn't get people out because of his velocity. You know, that's definitely not the reason why he's successful. He's successful because when he's good, and he did not have that stuff in Chicago on the south side, when he's good, he throws his fastball where he wants to, and mainly to the right-hander, that's up and in the strike zone. And then you speed the hitter up with 88 to 91. And then you throw a split finger, and that's the other pitch that is off of that and is very good. And then he steals strikes with a curveball every now and then. He flips up a little breaking ball that hitters aren't ready for, and they take it. So if he's got his command, 88, 89, 90, 91, it doesn't really matter to me. It's what he does using his stuff that gets guys out. So him throwing 88, if he's got command with it, it's fine. If it's 89, it's fine. It's, you know, I think people make, we hear so much about velocity, velocity, velocity. And, yeah, you know, it's important when you're throwing 100, but when you're 91 or 92 or you're, you know, 90 or you're 89, if you got something that goes with it, I think that's more effective.
You were having so much fun this weekend. Like, I really appreciate
homecoming for me, man.
Yeah.
I had people wearing black jerseys, blue jerseys. You know, all my friends were out there. It was a great time. I'm just glad we won 2 of 3. So last night when I went to my place, I could talk a little smack and didn't have to listen to a lot of it.
And I know that Friday night you were probably like, oh boy.
Yeah, I went home. I went straight home after that. I wasn't going to listen to that crap. No way. I went home.
I enjoyed you describing the – there was a foul ball, and you're like, hey, guys, the game is on the field. I appreciate Sox fans and Cubs fans hugging, but that ball went between two guys that weren't paying attention.
They were hugging. This is no kidding. They're in the second deck just off to our right. It was like, you know, they had just got to their seats. It's like the top of the second or bottom of the first. They're hugging. The ball went right between their heads and hit the wall and then went back the other way. And I'm like, oh, my. And they had no idea. I'm like, folks, we got to watch the game here. You know, it's over. It's the other way. You turn around and you can hug, but still watch what's happening at home plate, please.
But it was old home week on every level. On the broadcast level.
Oh, that's right.
Darren Jackson came over and hung out. He stole a homer from you once,
grand
right, Coop?
Grand slam. No, not just a homer, a grand slam. Yeah. Yeah, I'll never forgive him for it. Yeah, no. Heck with him. No, he's off the list.
He went up and took it, huh?
He did in the Metrodome. Yeah, he stole a home run, a grand slam away from me. And I'm coming around first, and he's jogging in from left field laughing, and I'm like, yeah, I can't say what I was yelling at him, but we'll just let that go.
That's amazing. Hey, what did you enjoy more yesterday? You pick your poison. Nico's heads-up double play on the infield fly, or did you like Ian Happ aggressively barreling through Colson Montgomery for the obstruction call? Which one did you enjoy more?
Well, I just think they're – to me, that the whole idea of playing baseball and using your brain because you understand our game, you understand the rules of the game, and you see these scenarios. And Nico talked about it. I was reading something that he had said, you know, where you think about these plays that can happen in a ball game, and it might happen once a year, and it's cool when the scenario plays itself out. And the thing that's hard is it's happening, and you got to figure it out in like 2 seconds. Am I going to do this or not? And there's always a, you know, something bad can happen too when you let a ball drop. But you know, I just think all those things are, you know, they're just good baseball plays. Nico doing that and throwing to third and getting Sosa was a great baseball play and giving it a shot. And then I believe, you know, in the rundown situation, you know, I didn't get to talk about it much. I wish I did, but. You know, at the end of the day, Nico did his job really well of drawing two throws in that rundown. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to talk about the how and why it worked. Nico getting two throws in the rundown and then them forcing the long throw back to second to give Happ a chance to try to score. And then Ian doing a very good job of understanding when you're in a rundown and you're the offensive player, you look for the opportunity to run into somebody because it's obstruction. So, and he... You know, the catcher held the ball way too long, and he got close to the third base. You just run right into him, and he just did. Cubs executed that exactly on offense the way you're supposed to, and the White Sox, unfortunately for them, did not.
I just remembered what the Nico play reminded me of. Remember Dansby opening weekend in Arizona? He caught a ground ball, picked up a ground ball, and pretended to throw to first. I think it was Corbin Carroll.
Yeah,
right. He went to third instead and got the base runner on his own, just like with a fake out. It's like you got a couple of guys in that infield who play it pretty damn smart for the Cubs.
Well, that play, you know, that was quite a while ago, but the play is in the hole, and Dansby comes up and pumps to first, knowing he doesn't really have a play at first base, but knowing the runner is going to see some of that in his peripheral vision, and you're going to round the bag. And a coach can't shut the guy down fast enough if you get right to the bag right after he's there. And that's exactly what Dansby did. And, you know, for infielders, we see this scenario playing out in your brain all the time. If this happens, I can do that if the scenarios are perfect. And it was there. And he made a great play.
You mentioned that you think this Cubs team's pretty good. And yep. From your point of view, what do they need to win the division, if anything, from the outside? How would you like to see them approach the next couple of days and then the next couple of months?
Well, I think it, you know, I'm a little hesitant always about talking out the trade deadline and what teams need, because that's not my, you know, I've never been a general manager or the head of baseball operations, and that's, you know, for those guys to do. When you just look, I mean, every team that's looking to play in October is looking for pitching help. Have you ever heard of a team not looking for pitching help at this time if you're hoping to be in October?
No.
So that's, you know, it's everybody's looking for that starter and that bullpen arm that's going to take you over the top. And then, you know, you can look at everybody's lineup and go, we're a little vulnerable against this or that. You know, one guy's scuffling on offense and maybe we could, you know, help that position out a little bit. So I think at the end of the day, if you can get starting pitching and you get a guy that's going to pitch in the top of the rotation come October, that is a huge, huge thing for any team. And, that's where I look at for the Cubs. If you can do that, you know, and then you get J-Mo back and maybe Assad, you know, he hasn't pitched all year. So, you know, and you're in really good shape come October.
So the 6'7 kid pitching for Milwaukee tonight, who's got a fastball at 102, that doesn't look like a whole lot of fun. He said, they say it's a slider at 96. I don't know if that's a slider or a cutter or what the hell that is, but it doesn't look like fun to face, Coombe.
No, he's pretty good. I watched film on him this morning, and he's got some explosion to his pitches. He just does. The left-handers, if they can stay off the high fastball and get him down in the zone, he throws quite a few pitches, you know, in his four-seamer in the middle of the plate. So that is what you've got to look to attack. You've got, when he makes a mistake and throws that little cutter that you're talking about that doesn't have a lot of movement sometimes, or that fastball in the middle, you've got to be ready to hit that. If it were me hitting tonight, I would not want to be going to two strikes against that guy. I would be swinging early in the at-bat, trying. If I got a good fastball to hit, I'd be putting that ball in play.
Coombe, we appreciate the time, man. Have a great call tonight with the Hall of Famer. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, boys. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks,
you guys,
Ron.
Enjoy Chicago. We're here in Milwaukee right now, yeah.
We'll be listening, man. It's a big series.
I'm going to take the boys out for a walk today, probably like third inning.
See you, boys.
See you, Ron. Coomer, talking about Jacob Mizorowski. That kid is a beast. Of course, the Brewers GM, Matt Arnold, said on a radio show after the rainout that the Cubs are afraid of the Miz.
Sounded like there were some business side conflicts with the Cubs on their end, and some city ordinance issues that came up as well. So I think potentially the conflict might have been Jacob Mizorowski, to be honest. But
we'll see, to me.
That's up to them and the league, and you know that for us from our standpoint, we're willing to play anybody, anywhere, anytime, and we'll see what it looks like in August, but we're ready to go today for sure.
There's the chip on the shoulder that the Brewers have towards the Cubs.
Didn't Craig Counsell do something similar with was it a sun out, or
he called a rain out? He said he could get sunburned during the rain out, something like that, when he was with the Brewers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, you got to accuse the team, the bigger org of ducking you. Kind of like it's the way that Marshall talks to me about Tecmo. You know what I'm saying?
Wow,
coming after me.
Is that, this is a long setup for that? Is that what happened?
The whole day.
That's right, because you did tell Alex to have that available.
Alex, you have that ready. Yeah, I told him that at 11 a.m.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Marshall's afraid. He's afraid of me. I'll play Marshall any day, any time in Tecmo Super Bowl.
Okay. When he rolls the TV in here tomorrow, you better be ready. You better be ready. We need to take a break. When we come back, Aaron Donald is getting people hurt with his workouts, including someone who hosts this show. We'll explain next on The Score. See, it even happened to you, Alex. See, now you know that Tanny is not messing around when it comes to stuff not firing when it's supposed to fire on that board. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show.
Sure is.
It really is.
Damn right it is.
So I don't know. Can I throw to this piece of tape that we were going to share?
That's a good. I think you probably can.
All right. Aaron Donald is no longer playing, but he's affecting people who are playing, like Jared Verse, with his workouts.
We show up. He doesn't say hi and nothing like that. He sees me. He's like, come on. We do four workouts. It's all cardio. Versa climber bike. What was it? Lunges and core. Four rounds each. You do all that. You're already tired. You're kind of like, oh, my God, whatever. Then you do four sets of core, two different like workouts. So it's like eight different workouts, four sets each. You do all that for four sets. You go through, he's like, are you ready for the real workout? I'm like, but I've been here for 45 minutes. What are you talking about? It's like 8 different circuits, all arms, 4 sets each. I'm there for an hour and a half. His wife came in laughing at me. I told her to call the police. Like, I'm dead serious. Like, I'm not even joking. I'm dead serious. I told her to call the police. She wouldn't do it. I tried to lie and say my mom was at my house and I had to go let her in. He told me to give my keys to his, like his management or assistant or something. They'd go let my mom in. So I wasn't leaving. Finished the workout. I'm, like, dead tired. I'm exhausted. I had a plan to, like, you know, jump in the sauna afterwards. Didn't happen. Had plans to watch film. Didn't happen. Went home, and I didn't work out for, like, another, like, day and a half because I couldn't move my body. He needs to stay away from me, and the security sees him on the property. They need to take care of him.
Unbelievably funny. I laughed so hard at that today.
So good.
And played that for Christine. But he's not the only one who's getting hurt by Aaron Donald workouts.
I watch Aaron Donald's workouts, and I can't duplicate them, obviously, but to the extent that I can, I try. So I had watched an Aaron Donald workout last Sunday morning, and he does the heavy dumbbells, and that's what I do when I do bench press. So I maxed out at like the 60s. Like, I'm comfortable by myself with the 60s without a spotter. And I was like, you know what? I've been getting those up pretty good. What would Aaron Donald do?
Oh, no.
Aaron Donald would go to the 70s.
Oh.
So I went to the 70s, and the issue wasn't lifting them. That was easy. It was getting them set so that I could lift them, and I hurt my wrist.
Oh, man.
So I've been on the shelf from bench press for about a week because of that.
Show us on your wrist where Aaron Donald hurt you.
Right here.
He did it right
there. Luckily, it's not broken, and I can resume all the other. But, yeah, man.
You and Jared Verse got to stay away.
Watching that guy, how are you 300 pounds and have abs?
It doesn't
make sense.
His wife comes in. She's laughing at me. I told her to call the police. Unbelievable.
I think that is great stuff.
Hey, it's time to give away a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire in River North.
I know who's hosting that.
Wednesday, August 6th, featuring special guest Matt Shaw, hosted by that man, me, Matt Spiegel. Baseball After Dark is presented by Huntington Bank. Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories. Right now, call or 6 to this line, 312-540-0670. You win a pair of tickets to hang out with me and Matt Shaw on Wednesday, the 6th of August at Wildfire in River North.
We appreciate that for sure. Alex, great job today, man.
Killing it. You really did
a wonderful job with today's show. Tanny will be back tomorrow. Shout out to Baby T coming in and handling it and holding us down and talking NASCAR for the 2 minutes that we talked NASCAR today. He was here for that, for sure. So, for Baby T, and for Alex, and for my partner, Matt Spiegel.
Tomorrow, by the way, Nico Horner and Craig Counsell on the show tomorrow.
They're both going to be on the show in the first 75 minutes of the show.
Bing, bang, boom.
So you'll want to be here for that. I'm Lawrence Holmes saying thank you so much for the love and support. You show this show every single day. We hope to repay the favor tomorrow. Starting at 2 o'clock, it's Spiegel and Holmes show, y'all, on The Score.
Mango?